From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM in a moment. Lizard Man, make sure you're part of that show. Well, NOAA weather forecasters have downgraded the chance of X flares, thank God, to 15% as the active sunspot AR-1890 is rotating now off the Earth side of the sun. The chance of M-class flares, however, remains at a high 60%. The world needs to be prepared for unpredictable pandemics from viruses making the leap from animals to people, according to scientists. Their warning follows the first reported case of a common bird flu. It's called now the H6N1, being detected in a woman earlier this year. Strange story, an American cruise ship passenger was reported overboard and the U.S. Coast Guard joined the search in the Pacific Ocean northeast of Hawaii. Probably never find her. The 54-year-old woman was witnessed intentionally going overboard from the Grand Princess, adding that the witness's account was confirmed by closed-circuit television. Well, Florida might be sinking into the ocean. Residents are evacuating from a Florida neighborhood after another sinkhole opened up, swallowing parts of two homes. The sinkhole is about 35 feet wide, 30 feet deep. The sinkhole is expanding as well. Many months ago, a sinkhole collapsed on an individual who was in his bedroom. He died. Mobile messaging startup Snapchat rejected an acquisition offer from Facebook that would have valued the company at $3 billion or more. U.S. consumers now estimate that they will spend $704 on Christmas gifts this season. Now, that's down from their $786 average in October. Americans' latest estimate is also significantly below the $770 they forecasted at this time last year. That is a worrisome sign for retailers. And what else is going on? Well, the generation wait, they say. Kids that are 20-something have stopped buying houses. They are refraining from major moves in a weak job market. Some of them aren't getting married. They're not having children. They're moving back with mom and dad. They're unable to make long-term plans or commitments because of the economy. Michael Shedlock with us. Mish, let's check in with you here. It's bad for kids in their 20s, isn't it?
It is. And you know what's kind of strange about this? How long ago did we discuss this, George?
We did.
It had to be, what, 2 years ago? Mainstream media just seems like we just now coming out with these stories saying, hey, wait a second, what's going on here? And we've been talking about this for a long time. Kids are coming, graduating from school, deep in debt, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. They can't afford to start a family. They can't afford to buy a house. They don't have a job, so they move back home with mom and dad. And some of them are staying in school longer and longer and longer. It's one of the reasons why the participation rate keeps declining. And, you know, the Fed and, you know, everyone pretends that things are okay, but they're not. They bailed out the banks, and here are the kids.
I remember back during my mother and father's days, everybody lived with the parents. I mean, they lived with the parents. We lived there for a little bit with them. The aunts and uncles all lived in the house. Everybody was there. Are we really reverting all the way back that far?
That's what it seems like to me, George. That is exactly what it seems like. These things go in really long cycles. And all of these economists, they don't understand that. They look at the last 10 years and, you know, looking back 5 years ago, as if the preceding 10 years or 20 years was normal. But it wasn't normal. If you take the data back, you see these cycles that you and I have talked about. The economists can't see it, and it's right there in front of their faces, and we talk about it here, and now we see these reports like this that are things that you and I have discussed for the last several years.
They are. Mish's blog, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Did the late, I think he's the late, comedian Andy Kaufman get away with his greatest stunt? The internet erupting following reports that Kaufman's younger brother, Michael, says that the performance artist faked his death. He did so during the annual Andy Kaufman Awards show at a comedy club in New York. fueling long-held conspiracy theories that the comedian's 1984 death was a hoax, according to The Hollywood Reporter, which attributed the original reports to the comic's comic and defamer. Michael Kaufman told the crowd that he had discovered an essay long ago about his brother's desire to fake his death, and that in 1999, he had been given instructions to meet his brother at a restaurant on Christmas Eve. Michael Kaufman said that he went to the restaurant, met a man that he did not know, was handed a note, supposedly from Andy. In the note, Andy said everything was great in his life, that explained his disappearance this way, that he simply wanted to get away from being Andy Kaufman. Here's an old clip when Andy Kaufman was talking to Johnny Cash.
Welcome, Andy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Andy, what do you want this?
Well, I would like to do for you some imitations. Okay.
But you already did an imitation of Santa Claus, remember?
Yeah, but that was stupid because I was wearing the red suit, and you know anyone can do it. Could do that. All you do is you say ho ho ho.
Oh, you do, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Kaufman was beloved for his portrayal on Taxi of Latka. And did he fake it? Who knows? His brother's saying he may have been misquoted. It's a bizarre story, folks, let me tell you. Let's check in now with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center and get his weekly update on what's going on in the skies. Peter, what do you have for us?
Good evening, George, and I'm delighted to be back tonight. I wish Andy Kaufman would come back and prove to me that UFOs are a joke. I would feel much more comfortable on this planet.
Here I come to save the day.
Just posted on Veterans Day, Monday of this week, just updated the UFO Center website with about 580 new reports. So people who enjoy reading those reports will have new reading material this week. Going back to last Sunday, the 9th of November, George, a gentleman left his place of work about 500 miles north of Fairbanks in the Kuparik oil field. He was driving away from his place of work, headed home at about 5:30 that Saturday evening. He looked out to the south of him, and he saw a very, very bright source of light above solid overcast that he couldn't figure out, way too bright for the moon. Long story short, he continued driving south about a half a mile or so, and he saw the object through the solid overcast, a very, very bright object. And it was projecting a blue beam of light down towards the ground. The only problem with that beam of light, he said, is that it did not reach the ground. It stopped short of the surface. He said suddenly the light snapped off, and the blue shaft of light snapped off. The object streaked to the north, headed up to an Air Force radar site about 12 miles north of his place of work. A really, really interesting report. A few hours later, a couple in Severna Park near Baltimore, Maryland, were driving home from dinner, and they saw a half a dozen of these red lights that I've reported on many occasions go right over their head. People were stopping on the road to get out and look at them. The next night, Sunday night, I think that's the 10th of November, going back to Alaska now, Palmer, Alaska, out east of Anchorage, a woman was standing in her kitchen, had just finished washing dishes, looked out her kitchen window, and saw, amidst a snowstorm, she saw an orange light appear to rise from surface level from the ground. And she looked a little more carefully, and then two more did the same thing, followed the first one. She saw a total of 13 lights, George. They just went up into the snowstorm and disappeared from her sight.
Amazing.
Very, very interesting. She got a photo, too, unfortunately taken through snow-covered trees, so it doesn't show very much.
Historically, Peter, let me ask you this, though. Historically, do you get more reports during this season than others?
You know, somebody just sent me a note, George, to that effect, asking me why we get more reports during August and September, and I was not aware of that fact. But I'll say, I will go on record as saying that in the 19 years I've been doing this, I've never seen as many reports and as many credible reports and as many reports of these red and orange fireballs as I have seen over the last year and a half, most of all in the last 3 or 4 months.
Well, you keep
something very, very strange is going on, George. I could go on and on citing really interesting reports, but I would encourage people just to go to our website. If they're interested in this phenomenon and if they're interested in knowing what's going on, staying tuned to Coast and reading the website for UFOCenter.com.
Super. Thank you so much, Peter. You have a great Thanksgiving. I'm sure we'll talk to you before that. Well, a year ago, I talked with Lyle Blackburn about Boggy Creek. That's right, the Beast of Boggy Creek. Now we're going to talk about Lizard Man, the true story of the Bishopville Monster. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Lyle Blackburn is an author, musician, cryptozoologist from Dallas, Texas. During his research, Lyle has often explored remote reaches of the southern U.S. in search of strange, shadowy creatures that said to inhabit the dense backwoods and swamplands of these areas. He's a staff writer and cryptozoology advisor to Rugmorg magazine and is a frequent contributor to websites such as Lauren Coleman's Cryptomundo.com. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Always a pleasure, Lyle. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
I'm looking forward to this, too. Tell me a little bit about Lizard Man. What the heck is this?
Well, the Bishopville Lizard Man is one of those kind of classic cryptozoology cases. The creature was seen in and around a small town of Bishopville, South Carolina, starting in about 1988. And it was one of those kind of quick-burning things that generated a lot of media sensation. There was a lot of sightings, in that initial phase in 1988. And, it sparked the imagination and the interest of people ever since. And, you know, of course, there's other reports of reptilian humanoids, so to speak. And the Bishopville Lizard Man would, you know, basically be considered one of the pinnacle cases of these type of creatures.
How did people describe him, Lyle? Was it like an alligator that stands up, or how?
Well, and that's one of the interesting things about this. As I started looking into it, you know, my initial impression and what you got from a lot of the media stories, that it was sort of this, you know, alligator man with, you know, an extended jaw, a tail and things like that. But when you started actually looking at what the witnesses describe, and some of these were described in police documents, people were describing something almost a little more plausible. It was a creature that stood maybe 7 feet tall. It was humanoid. It didn't have the silly alligator mouth or things like this, only occasionally described as having a tail. But it was said to have maybe scaly, greenish skin, possibly brown skin. And in some cases, people described it as having hair. So it was just a large, unknown, humanoid type creature.
When the ancients would describe Satan or the devil, would it seem like the Lizard Man now?
Well, you know, yeah, if you start looking back at, you know, historical mythos and folklore and everything like that, there's a lot of versions of reptilian type creatures. And so, you know, this seemingly would be something that fits into a modern day version of that, certainly.
Well, and Lyle, when did you jump on the scene here to start investigating?
Well, I was, you know, following my Beast of Boggy Creek book. I was focusing on some research that had to do with areas of swamps, and those swamps always inspire some great spooky stories. Oh, and there's always sightings of cryptids in these areas. And so, as I was looking at different swamps, I visited Bishopville, South Carolina, in a place called Scapewar Swamp, and this is where the Lizard Man was generally sighted. And, you know, I was familiar with the case and, you know, being one of those famous cryptozoology cases, but once I got out there and started talking to some of the locals, I talked with a sheriff down there that had researched the case from its beginning, and I started to realize there was a whole lot more to this story than you ever read in other books. It's mentioned, it's online, and things like that, but it was a really fascinating story. So once I kind of locked onto that, I thought this would be a perfect follow-up to my Beast of Boggy Creek book, and I just focused in on that particular case and just really dug up all the information and all the witness accounts.
Are you convinced that whatever these folks might have been seeing, they were truly looking at something very strange?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, a lot of people, you know, try to dismiss it as all these people were hallucinating or everybody was making it up or it was a hoax. But in the end, especially like I said, I was reviewing some witness testimony that was documented by the police, and there was no doubt that most of these witnesses saw something. I mean, something very strange and something they could not explain.
Now, let's talk about some various encounters with Lizard Man. What kind of stories did you track down, Lyle?
Well, you know, the first and foremost and most famous sighting of the Lizard Man was when it allegedly attacked a teenager in the summer of 1988. This young man, Christopher Davis, was driving home from work from Bishopville to basically his rural area. And he had to pass through Skateboard Swamp. We had the unfortunate bad luck, actually, of having a flat tire out in this area. And so he stopped and he changed it. And as he was putting the flat tire and the jack back in the trunk of his car, he looks up and there's just enough moonlight to where he could see this humanoid creature moving across the fennel grass towards him. So he kind of looks up, and as he gets a little closer, he could see that this was not a person. This was not anything he had ever seen before. And in fact, he described it as, you know, being very large. It was bulky. He said he believed it had three fingers. It had, you know, greenish skin. So of course he's seeing this. He's miles from many people. And so he jumps in his car, tries to start it. And as he's trying to get the car going, this thing attacks. It jumps on the car, tries to get in. And he says he could see the long black fingernails hanging down on the window. And he finally gets it started and, you know, takes off and swerves around and manages to lose the thing. But through a particular strange sequence of events, he ended up in the sheriff's office and telling this story. And that of course, got into the newspaper. And that's what really set off the whole Lizard Man thing.
Could you imagine, Lyle, having a creature like that trying to tear open your car while you're trying to drive away? I mean, this is like a horror movie, isn't it?
Oh, completely. And I think that's one of the things why this really stands out, you know, especially in all cryptozoology, because, I mean, here you have a very strange creature and you have it attacking someone. So it's a very particular case and certainly extremely frightening for this young man.
When the media frenzy started, how widespread was it?
Well, it was amazing. I mean, I knew that there was some media surrounding this thing, and you got the usual newspapers in the local area. You've got some of the radio stations picking it up, but this thing was huge because in that summer of 1988. It ended up getting on national news, the CBS evening news shows, NBC nightly news. Even Good Morning America came down there and did a live broadcast from Skateboard Swamp, which, you know, just signified how this sparked, you know, the imaginations and, you know, the intrigue of this so-called Lizard Man and, you know, worldwide.
Well, why do you think, you know, the media jumped all over this? And we've got an illustration, by the way, thanks to you at coasttocoastam.com. This is one ugly looking creature, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great, my artist did a great job of depicting, you know, what these people described as a Lizard Man. It certainly, adds to the spookiness of this. And I think that's one reason the media really picked up on it. I mean, like I said, the depictions of this thing, they could just really go in all sorts of directions. Just the name Lizard Man, was something that, you know, the media could pick up on. And certainly, you know, some of them, you know, had a tongue-in-cheek approach to it, you know, had a good time with it. But ultimately, they just reported what these witnesses saw. And that's really what, drew people into the story.
All right, well, stay with us, Lyle. We're going to come back. You're with us a couple hours tonight. We'll take calls next hour. But definitely get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Just take a look at the artist sketch that Lyle provided for us through his artist of the Lizard Man. You will see one wretched-looking creature. Trust me. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Lyle Blackburn. We're talking about his latest research storybook, Lizard Man, the true story of the Bishopville Monster. Are we still getting reports, Lyle, about the Lizard Man?
Well, you know, sightings of the creature have dropped off, but there's still been some strange reports out there which have to do with cars being mauled, apparently torn up by animals. And this is another aspect of the case that's kind of interesting and very strange. So, you know, as recently as several years ago, there was a case like this. And of course, this is linked to the original sightings of the Lizard Man. So when a when something like this comes up more recently, of course, this brings up you know, rumors that the Lizard Man may be back and things like that. So unfortunately, this case in that particular area, you don't have a lot of current sightings of the Lizard Man. Most of it was concentrated in the area of 1988 on up into the 90s.
And I assume the media frenzy, you know, died down as well.
Sure, yeah. It was really concentrated there in that summer of 88. You know, of course, the you know, since nobody really drug a body for it or anything else, the media just sort of lost interest. You know, they kind of rehashed it every once in a while. And, of course, down in that area, you know, it's become such a legend and a part of the, you know, local history that, you know, on Halloween and things like that or on anniversaries, they definitely roll out the Lizard Man retro story.
Now, you visited the swamp area. What, can you kind of describe, Lyle, what it looks like?
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, and I think that was one important thing about this. If I'm going to, you know, really bring the area to, you know, describe it to the readers and things, I should certainly go there. And in this particular case, Skateboar Swamp, you know, is definitely a spooky place. And even today, it's fairly remote. You know, there's been some developments out there since the 80s, but it's a black water swamp, and it's got a main channel that runs through it, and a lot of the land on either side is not something that can be developed, so there's still a lot of remote and rugged wilderness and swamp areas out there. And of course, you know, that's a likely place where unknown creatures, you know, could remain elusive and conceal themselves. So to me, it seemed like, at least from what I could observe by going down into Skateboard Swamp, that, you know, it is a place where something, a report like this is reasonable.
Native American tribes historically in that area, that region, told of a strange group of creatures, did they not?
They did, and that's one of the really spooky things about this is, as I started, you know, researching these modern sightings of something that people called the Lizard Man, you know, 500 years before, there are stories in the local Native American writings that told of a race of men whom they called, roughly translated to Sharp Tails, and they were described as having scaly skin and these tails that were maybe 2 feet long, and they were very rigid. So this wouldn't be like a tail like a normal lizard or an alligator where it's flexible. It was some kind of a rigid tail which required them to dig a hole in the ground so that they could sit. But the point here being that oddly enough, you know, you look back at these old Native American stories. And what were they describing? Something that we would, you know, call a Lizard Man today. So pretty spooky stuff.
Lyle, if you had to assume what the creature was, would you say it was earthbound, it was a creature that was on this planet since the get-go, or some kind of extraterrestrial creature?
Judging from the way the witnesses reported it, you know, it seemed to be more, you know, of just an earthbound creature. There wasn't any reports in which it seemed to disappear or shapeshift, or there was no UFOs sighted in conjunction with a sighting or anything like that. You know, the case is generally considered to be, you know, a cryptozoology type case. But of course, you know, when you're talking about any kind of a hybrid between a human and a reptile, you know, the biological possibilities of that are kind of, you know, extraordinary. So, but I tried to approach it from that. Is this an unknown animal? Did people see a lizard man? And of course, that's what the locals called it. But in some cases where the people said they believed it had hair, and in a few cases, people just flat out described it as being a Sasquatch. So I thought, well, maybe an angle on that is that people were seeing, maybe they were seeing a Sasquatch that was wet or covered in algae or something like that. So there was a lot of aspects to it that make it seem like it was some sort of cryptid and some sort of a earthbound entity.
Tell us more about the artist sketch that you provided for us that we've got on the coasttocoastam.com website.
I uploaded two if they're up there, and one of them was I like to get what I call crime scene sketches, and this would be a sketch of what the scene is as described by a witness. And the first one was the Christopher Davis sighting, where he's standing by his car and the creature's coming at him in the moonlight. And there is another one of my favorites from the book. It's got the sharp tail, the creature from the Native American tales.
Yeah. And he's eating a fish.
Right. They said that these creatures had come from the sea and they existed on eating fish. So it was a, you know, perfect thing to put in the drawing there. It's really a spooky one. So I really like that drawing.
They look, you know, like they're very carnivorous, and they don't look friendly, do they?
No. You know, I think in most cases, especially where it was shown to have, you know, shown aggressive tendencies to somebody, you can just kind of assume that this creature would be carnivorous, dangerous, and that's what's portrayed in the drawings.
Now, we do get a lot of reports of reptilian-looking ETs. People have seen this creature, too, and I'm wondering just how similar the two might be, Lyle.
Yeah, certainly, you know, there's a lot of this associated with extraterrestrial sightings and things like that. What I tried to do within my book was to research and summarize a lot of the other cases from around the U.S. in which people describe a similar creature, something that was either reptilian or amphibious and, you know, bipedal or humanoid in some way. And, you know, I kind of compared and contrasted those sightings. And what I got was there's definitely a wide range of descriptions of these creatures. I mean, some of them are a little more what, you know, lizard-like. Some of them are a little more frog-like. You know, there's the Loveland frog case from Ohio, Thetis Lake monster from British Columbia, which was kind of a shorter creature, but there are all these sort of creatures from the Black Lagoon type things, and it's hard to say if, you know, just where they come from, but it's certain that people are reporting sightings of these type creatures.
Now, as far as the lizard man is concerned, Lyle, and these reports have diminished significantly, why do you think that is?
Well, that's a hard one to reconcile, but, logically, you know, the creature could have been moving through the area. It could have moved on. It could have
died.
You know, the developments in the area could have moved it out. You know, in a lot of cases, and one thing in particular, I like I said, I talked to the sheriff out there who had investigated. He said, you know, you got to remember that maybe 1 in 10 people who actually see something like this are even willing to tell anybody about it. So there could be other sightings, and there could have been other sightings, even more in modern times. People just don't want to talk about it anymore, especially down there because, you know, at this point there's kind of a stigma attached. Oh, you saw the lizard man or whatever. You know, people aren't so willing to come forth and tell people that they saw this. They don't want to be in the paper, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Have there been reports that more than one of these creatures are seen together?
No, in this particular area, I could find no reports where they had seen two at the same time. Each time it was an individual creature by itself, you know, usually a rather brief sighting. Sometimes it was seen running across the road in front of a car, headlights. It was seen hanging around the Skapor Swamp Bridge, and occasionally people that were driving through reported that the creature would actually lunge at the car. So in the case of Christopher Davis, where it chased him, this thing was still apparently trying to jump at people in their cars.
Now, these cases are absolutely mind-boggling. They seem to be somewhat violent. Has anybody, outside of the Chris Davis report jumping on his car, has anybody ever been hurt by one of these creatures?
No, not directly. There was, you know, no evidence of that. It seemed like Christopher Davis came pretty darn close. Now, there was another interesting aspect to the case, though, that, and what I mean by no one was hurt directly, there seemed to be possibly an indirect effect, almost a curse of the lizard man, because several of the witnesses were later died in unfortunate and tragic ways. Christopher Davis was later shot in his home, which is a sobering thing. The two criminals came in there and literally shot him, and one of the other witnesses died in a car accident later. And these kids were, you know, fairly young at the time they saw it, and so they didn't make it too much further in their lives. There was an army colonel that had seen this thing, and some of this I couldn't actually detail the entire report because it was confidential, but this guy died and some very bizarre things happened in relation to his death. So like I said, as I researched this case, I found some other just really fascinating aspects.
Is this like the curse of King Tut's sarcophagus? You see one of these creatures and something horrible happens to you?
Well, it could be. And I know the sheriff down there, I said, how do you feel about this? And he said, well, you know, it is kind of spooky that these people have died in this way. So I don't know. It could be the next great curse, the curse of the lizard man.
Yeah. Is it more animal or more human?
It seemed more human by descriptions because, I mean, other than the allegedly had three fingers and, you know, greenish skin, but in general, it was a little more humanoid than it was reptilian, which, you know, brought forth some other theories that, you know, there was somebody dressing as this, you know, was a hoax, or if it could have been somebody with a really bad skin condition. I mean, there was all sorts of theories, you know.
Any similarities between the lizard man and your Boggy Creek story?
Well, you know, there were similarities in the fact that both of these creatures were seen in and around small towns. You know, the effect that it had on the town by sort of associating this town forevermore, basically, with this creature. You know, if you search Bishopville, South Carolina, right there, you're going to see Lizard Man. So same thing with Boggy Creek, where Falk, Arkansas, they just are forever associated with the legend of Boggy Creek. And, you know, I found that in both cases, people of the town, some of them, you know, embraced this thing. A lot of them were embarrassed by it. You know, you get reactions all across the board of how this monster affects, you know, has a social effect on the local community. So there was a lot of similarities. You had local law enforcement that took it seriously in both cases, and I spoke to sheriffs in both of these cases that offered a lot of, you know, insight into the case. They offered witness statements. They offered, you know, real solid police documents. So that was definitely helpful to the case and very similar in both cases.
Did the police, they obviously took it seriously because they investigated it, but did any of them share some inside stories with you that, you know, they thought, oh my God, these people are darn serious?
Well, I think they did underscore the fact that they believe that the witnesses saw something. And it was the way this kind of started was the original call they got prior to even Chris Davis reporting his sighting was that somebody reported the car being torn up down there. So the deputies were dispatched, and they went down there, and they're like, this is kind of strange. It looks like an animal tried to eat this car. So they called the sheriff, Liston Truesdale, said, man, you better get down here. This is some weird stuff. So he went down there, and as they were looking into this car mauling, that's when the locals came up and said, well, maybe it was the Lizard Man. So the police are like, the Lizard Man? What's that? And then they started telling how some of the locals had sighted this humanoid creature. And that's what kind of gave the police, you know, the heads up. And then later on, when Chris Davis came and reported his sighting, the police figured, you know, they had to kind of take it seriously because they weren't sure what it was. And if they didn't do anything about it and this thing went on and killed somebody, well, you know, they're going to be in hot water because they didn't do anything. So they kind of had their hands tied as far as just playing it out and to try to find other witnesses that could describe it. And so, you know, the retired Sheriff Truesdale was able to share with me his feelings about Christopher Davis coming in there and telling his story and these other folks. And he assured me even to this day, he believes that those people saw something.
Were there any reports of this creature, the Lizard Man, in other regions around this country?
There was, well, you know, it's hard to compare the descriptions too close because a lot of them are kind of sketchy and brief, but there was some sightings in New Jersey back in the 70s and up in New York in the 70s, which described almost a similar type thing. And in that case, I believe Lauren Coleman, you know, would label them as Gator Men or something like that. You know, but they were all kind of fall into this swamp monster category. So in some cases where you have the Loveland frog, it's a completely different creature, even though it's kind of similar. But, you know, there were other cases. Another famous one was when back in Riverside, California in 1952, a man named Charles Wetzel reported seeing a creature similar to this run up out of a river bottom, run across the road, and try to assault him in his car, which has another, you know, set of similarities to the Lizard Man attack. So, you know, while I couldn't get, you know, point-by-point description comparisons, you do see a general description that seems to match what we see in the Bishopville case.
This creature seems to have an affinity with cars, doesn't it?
He definitely does. I don't know, maybe he was fascinated with the metal. You know, there's a lot of theories that because of the mauled cars and then the way he approached cars, you know, it definitely had a affinity for vehicles.
Lyle, the people in the area of Bishopville, were they scared? Did they seem scared? Did they just seem like it was a comic thing? How do you think they've been reacting?
I think the people that live down and in around Skateboard Swamp, the people that were closer to some of the witnesses, they were definitely scared. And some of the police reports I read where the witnesses, in one case, a family of five saw the creature all at one time, and they wrote down, you know, within days of seeing this thing. It wasn't like I was interviewing them now. They're trying to remember back for 30 years. They were writing this stuff down the next day. And you could see in the writing, you could feel the emotion and how scared they were when they saw this. So, you know, in the case where you have the people that knew witnesses, I think there was some fear regarding this creature. And, of course, people who just read it in the paper or just lived up in the town, you know, a lot of them just, you know, of course, think it's a joke or, you know, you just really never know how you're going to react unless you actually were to see one of these creatures, and it's going to change your world, you know.
Lyle, we're going to come back. I want to talk more with you about the Lizard Man, and also we'll take some phone calls. Cryptomundo.com, one of the websites, of course. LyleBlackburn.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Lizard Man, the true story of the Bishopville Monster.